Live from the heartland and the crossroads of America, it's Tony Katz today.
So we're approving aid for Ukraine, in Israel, in Taiwan, just not the border. That's a lot of approval. But not for the thing that affects us the most. I say the most because it is very clear and very obvious to the rational mind that what happens with Russia and Ukraine will have an effect on us. There are people who want to say, no, it's ridiculous, it's none of our business. I think those people are wrong. And on the political right, it is kind of hard to fathom. It's hard to fathom that there are people who want to tell me out loud, repeatedly, over and over and over again, that what happens in Ukraine or to Ukraine doesn't matter to us. Of course it does. To believe that is to believe that Russia doesn't have expansionist views. Of course it does. This is not debate. And I would debate it with anybody. Tony Katz today. 833-468-8669, 833-GOT-TONY. I'll debate it with anybody. If Tucker wants to debate, I'll debate it with him because he's just wrong on the subject. Tucker being Tucker Carlson. Oh, he's also wrong about the dropping of atomic bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki not having a value. You may have rather that the bomb never existed. You may have rather that the Japanese never attacked us. You may have rather there have never been a concentration camp and been no World War II. But all those other things happened, and the bomb got created. And the dropping of the bomb saved lives and ended a war. And it was discussed, and it was debated, and hotly debated, and passionately debated. This is not something that you simply chuckle about and move on. But that was a conversation that Tucker had with Joe Rogan. Let's get off that for now. Let's get back to the thing. Even I, who support providing aid to Ukraine, before we fix the southern border, before we fund the southern border, whole thing doesn't make any sense. Well, Tony, we have to be a nation that does two things at once. I wholeheartedly agree, but that's not what we did, is it? The Democratic Party, they were okay with funding Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan. I don't disagree with any of this funding, but they weren't okay with funding the southern border. How could anybody think this is all right? And why would anybody think that this is a story where you go after Speaker Mike Johnson? Oh, people are going after Speaker Mike Johnson. The Republican from Louisiana is taking it on the chin. He may very well lose the speaker position for it. He knew this was going to come, and he said, I don't care. These things have to get done. We lay it all out there. We put it out. We let people vote. For a lot of people on the political right, what he did was give up the ship. We're not funding the other things until you fund the border. Said in another way, could be said, Mike Johnson blinked. If I were to be the guy engaged in the spin here, I would be pushing the fact that the Democratic Party doesn't care if brown children get trafficked across the border. The Democratic Party doesn't care if brown girls get raped. The Democratic Party doesn't care if brown children die of fentanyl. The Democratic Party doesn't care. Hakeem Jeffries, Eric Swalwells, Adam Schiff's, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's Democratic Party doesn't care what happens to brown children. They hate brown children. And I'd be saying that if I was the Republican Party morning, noon, and night. Because look at what they'll care about. They'll care about the children of Ukraine, care about the children of Israel, care about the children of Taiwan. All good things, but they don't care about the children of the United States, and they don't care about the children of South America or Central America. That's pretty despicable. Pretty despicable stuff. But it's the Republican Party. They don't know how to talk. They don't know how to engage the English language. They don't know how to be proactive in their own defense to turn it into offense. They don't. So this funding that's now going to take place, it is not that I oppose it. I oppose the idea that we didn't do the border. And I oppose the idea that the party gave up a leverage position to get here. They should have passed a funding bill on the border and said, you'll get the rest after you do this, and forced the Senate. But they didn't. And if you tell me what's because they wouldn't have Democrats on their side, so it never would pass, you just keep bringing it up over and over and over and over again. And if it fails 10 times, look at these Democrats. You don't care about the southern border. I don't know why they don't care about little brown children, but they don't. What can I say? I fight differently. I can accept incrementalism. I can accept small victories as opposed to large-scale wins. It's okay. Bit by bit and piece by piece. It's harder to comprehend the idea that what we did here created a value. Well, Tony, this is what had to be done for America. I think it all had to be done for America. Do you see the difference? And Democrats don't think that the border had to be done for America. That should be their legacy. Now Politico wants to report that the Ukraine funding is really important. As a matter of fact, the United States is weighing sending military advisors to Ukraine. Can you define for me what a military advisor is? According to the people at Politico, it would not be a combat role, but would advise and support the Ukrainian government and military. You mean we're going to run the war for Ukraine? It's kind of like when you have a friend who's playing Monopoly and you got to like sit in for them because they have to use the bathroom. Now you got all this real estate and got all this cash. It wasn't yours. You can do anything you want with it. I don't know, maybe there's a better game than Monopoly. Or you guys will tell me. We're now going to direct the war against Russia. That's not where I want to be. I want to support Ukraine. I want to support them with bullets, and I want to support them with hardware. And the bullets are getting made here in the United States, so people have argued that this is a jobs program. They never pursued it like that, and I think it would be ugly if they did. But it will keep manufacturers in the U.S., in a good spot. But it shouldn't be thought of as a jobs program. Sending advisors I have the same trepidation as when they said, yeah, we're going to give them this missile defense system, and we're going to send in some troops to teach them how to use it. I don't know. No. Or when they were coming here to use it, and then we had to go there because they couldn't learn here. Bad things, man. Bad things, and things that people are rightfully concerned about. If you say to me, it's no big deal, this happens all the time, I'll say to you, I think that that's a mistake. It is a big deal. Because everything inches closer to things that we don't want. And it inches, which is, of course, America's involvement. And it inches closer while you don't inch closer to the thing we do want, which is a safe and secure border. That's a legitimate concern. So you may or may not see these envoys to Ukraine. Now, we all understand, because we pay attention, that Ukraine has very little chance of victory here. The only chance they have towards victory is exactly what we have done, and if we keep doing it. You have only the ability of the United States to keep Ukraine going in this fight. Creates another whole level of issues. These bills also do some other things, and there's a whole conversation about TikTok in here. But I think before us comes the question of what happens to the Speaker, Mike Johnson. Because Marjorie Taylor Greene is saying, I've had it. It's enough. He's got to go. I'm going to get rid of him. And she was on, she was on with Maria Bartiromo over there on the Fox Business. And Maria Bartiromo is saying, okay, you want to get rid of him, but do you have a plan?
The Republican Party is the party that needs to change, and they need to start reflecting the will of their voters and actually do the job instead of just running their mouth constantly every single campaign cycle.
I guess what I'm saying is, how does this help keeping a majority in the House? How does this help by electing your candidate? I want to take a break, and I want to ask you what your plan is. So you're threatening Mike Johnson. You say he's not doing what the people want. What is your alternative?
That's a good question. It's a good question. Marjorie Taylor Greene, I think Gosar is involved in this. Thomas Massey, they're all wrong. They're ridiculous. And it's not that we should have done the border first. It's that removing the speaker won't do anything. You are X number of months away from an election. Let the election take place. The speaker will be gone anyway. And people say to me, speaker's got to go. No, he doesn't. Your emotions have to get in check. I do not make the argument that you should take the abuse from the party. I make the argument that you shouldn't abuse yourself for this pretend idea of getting revenge on the party. Getting rid of Kevin McCarthy was nothing more than masturbation. It did nothing. Zero. It was an exercise in futility so Matt Gaetz could show you how cool he was, yet nothing happened and things got worse. That's what happened. We're going to argue this? We're really going to debate this? Got nowhere with getting rid of McCarthy. Nowhere. And you'll get nowhere with getting rid of Johnson. But if you tell me you keep the majority and you don't elect him a speaker next time around, I'm cool with that. I'm cool with that. We'll get into what happens now with TikTok, and maybe that's a win that maybe Republicans should learn how to talk about. Oh, and as for the pogroms going on at Columbia and at Northwestern at Yale, there are still people out there who want to tell you that these are all just peace-loving protests and the problem is you. You're not even Jewish. Don't worry. As we have been saying from the beginning, this has always been about you. Everything we're seeing at Columbia is about you. I'll get it. I'll break it down. I'll get into it coming up. Tony Katz. Tony Katz today. So the guy who set himself on fire was not protesting Donald Trump. Tony Katz. Tony Katz today. It was, I watched it. I won't watch it again. I can't do it. So this was at Trump's trial when they were still picking the jury because the trial started today. And then the whole thing with the Supreme Court, that's on Thursday. I read the calendar wrong. I thought that was today. This is about whether or not you can charge a president with a crime for things they did while they were president. The jury has said this is the hush money nonsense. It is such a nonsense trial. There's no crime here. What do you have? Andrew McCarthy writing about it. Was he in the New York Post? I mean, there's just no crime. You have to want it. You have to make it up. And that's exactly what Alvin Bragg, the district attorney, did. It's not even a question. So you have the jury selection going on, and this guy outside the courtroom in a park pours fuel on himself and sets himself on fire. He died from his injuries, which, of course he did. If you watch the video, you're like, absolutely he did. Well, this guy wasn't there to protest Trump. He was there because he's a conspiracy theorist. And he lived in Florida, and his family knew that he had issues. They didn't know he had left the state. And he went to New York, and he He wanted everyone to know, as a way of protest, that there was a fascist coup being put together by Donald Trump and Joe Biden to bring about basically a one world government. No, don't get me wrong. I am not a fan of one world governments. I'm not a Klaus Schwab guy. I am not one of these people who believes you'll own nothing and you'll be happier. The hell I will. I don't know where happiness is where you don't get to own real property. If you don't own things, how do you then get the thing? Oh, the thing is given to me. And if the thing is given to me, then by definition, the thing can be taken away. So how do I prevent the thing from being taken away? Because I don't have the rights to keep it because it's not actually mine. I now have to act in a certain way, conform a certain way, think a certain way, behave a certain way, state certain things, not state certain things. So there is no way to not own anything and be happier. There is a way to own minimal things and be happy. That's called being a minimalist. But the only way one could actually engage a level of happiness, a way of engaging a concept of freedom and wanting to secure it, is by being able to own property, being able to own things, and then being able to tell somebody who wants to take it from you, no. Freedom, just as a basic concept, is the ability to say no. It isn't actually owning the thing. It's the ability to fight for the thing that you own, the ability to say, no, you can't take it. Because if someone could just take it, well, you're not really free. I'll debate this anywhere. I don't know. I guess I'm in a mood. I'm not always in a mood to debate, but today I'm in a mood. You have to be able to own the thing. So anything that would create a society that says, you don't own things and you'll be happier, that's impossible. Impossible. Own less things, right? Own less things. That is possible. No things. Yeah, it's not really the way it works now, does it? Oh, don't get me wrong. You can find a couple people who will go out there and get rid of all their worldly possessions and be super happy. But no one's stopping them from getting those worldly possessions back. There, that's a little more clarity to the thing. This guy thought there was going to be this massive coup, and so he wanted to bring attention to it. Lighting yourself on fire, which is known as self-immolating, is not the answer. There was a guy, a soldier, who did this to protest how we were dealing with Hamas in Gaza. And as far as I'm concerned, what a terrible guy. You want to side with terrorists by lighting yourself on fire? What am I supposed to do at that moment? Feel for you. You are clearly so twisted and so lost and so broken that you would do this to support terrorists. Now, I'm not going to say, now there was a brave man. There was a broken, sad, damaged man. That's more like it. What do you say of those at Columbia University, as you've been seeing the videos all weekend, at Northwestern, where the dean of students is attending rallies against Jews? Northwestern. Yale, where they tear down the American flag and they scream out, Viva Palestina. And I swear to you, I have no idea what I'm supposed to do with that. Viva Palestina. I don't think that connects to how they might speak in Gaza. Oh, and by the way, what Palestine? Oh, you get to a Palestine by believing from the river to the sea. So you get to that by killing off Israel and all the Jews and all the Israelis and all the Israeli Arabs and everybody else. What we're seeing at Columbia and at Yale, these are pogroms. And the only thing separating these people from the people at Charlottesville are freaking tiki torches. We will start to break it down in the multiple ways it needs to be broken down. And then we're going to talk about force. Tony, are you calling for violence? Gosh, no. I'm calling for a response to the violence we're already seeing. This is Tony Katz Today. it's too dangerous to hold classes, then everyone should quit Columbia and let it break. Certainly, any university that can't keep the student body under control and stop them from singling out whether it's Jewish students or anybody else, they shouldn't get any federal funds. I don't care if those people have jobs. I want to be clear. I don't give a damn if anybody at Columbia University or any other university has a job. They don't deserve any government funding. Go learn to code. Go fix my burger. Do something. But you ain't worth a damn if you're telling me that students can actually keep other students from walking down the street and everybody else is like, yep, that's normal. That's fine. Any governor that doesn't send in the assistance to put an end to that isn't worth electing. They should be thrown out of office immediately, if not sooner. And most importantly, any parent who says after watching this, well, we'll write the check so you can go next year, is a parent that hates their child. And I think we should say so. Tony Katz today, 833-468-8669, 833-GOT-TONY, that's the number, that's how you get to be a part of the program. Let's start where we start. Columbia University is no different than Harvard and no different from all the other bigoted universities. They have been this way for a great number of years. That this is surprising, what we are now seeing, is only for those people who were never honest with themselves about what it was that was happening for all of these years. Somebody had asked on social media, how did this happen? And the answer is very slowly and then all at once. But it did not happen in a vacuum. The bigotry on college campuses for us, for you and me, is not new because we have been discussing it for years. How have we been discussing it? We have been discussing it in regards to conservatives. Ann Coulter shows up on a campus and they protest and they scream and yell and she can't speak. And Douglas Murray shows up on a campus and they scream and yell and he can't speak. And Riley Gaines show up on a campus and they literally chase her down a hallway. And everybody looked the other way when we said, hey, look at this. And I want to be clear about something. Who looked the other way? Liberal Jews. Now, you guys know that I'm Jewish. And very often when I'm having these conversations, I'm accused of, oh, there you are talking about Israel again. How do I not talk about the thing that has been dominating the news for the last 72 hours? I'm supposed to pretend it's not there because of my foreskin? No, not doing that. That's crazy talk. No. Liberal Jews looked at what was happening and then said, so where do I write the check? Oh, this is where I go to school. That's right. That's right. I'm still going to go to Columbia. I'm still going to go to this one. I'm still going to go to that one. Because they lied to themselves. How did they lie to themselves? What did they say? They said, that's right, those conservatives are terrible. They said, that's right, this attack on black people is terrible. They said, that's right, this attack on gay people is terrible. They said, that's right, this attack on trans people is terrible. And in all of those places, all of those places, they found themselves next to this group and next to that group, and they were standing in solidarity. Standing in solidarity. They were fighting against the injustice. And in doing so, never mind how wrong I think that is, in many of these cases, depending on what the case was, they never asked themselves, what would happen if this was about me? because they always said to themselves, see, I'm a good person. See, I'm a decent person. You see, everything's going to be fine. You see, it's all solid. Oh, yeah, no, they're on my side. And they never acknowledged that the tenet that connects them is not fighting the good fight. It is the Marxism. It is about the destruction of civilization. It is about looking at the world through the view of oppressed and oppressor, which is what Barack Obama referred to as the 99% and the 1%, which is what Karl Marx referred to as the proletariat and the bourgeoisie. It is all the same conversation, but every generation, they seem to come up with a new language. Why? Because people get hep to the jive and realize what the language is. So they change the language in order to get a new group of people. All Marxists, all communists are filthy, disgusting, low rent, low class liars, because that's the feature of their ideology. They have to lie. If they don't lie, it can't work. They must. Well, there's only one thing worse than lying to others. And that's lying to yourself. Because nobody who has ever read a book, Jewish or otherwise, not a Jewish book, a person, Jewish or otherwise, who has read a book, there you go, could take a look at communism named Marxism and not note the levels of hatred towards Jews that exist in that world. And somehow, shockingly, if you will, liberal Jews didn't notice that when it hits the fan, as it will, like it's the movie Airplane, nobody will be there for them. Being in Indianapolis, Indiana, have had this conversation over the years. I am almost 10 years in Indianapolis. Great time. And my interactions with the so-called Jewish community have not been great. And I have brought this up many times, the issues and the problems and the political nature of things, not standing up. And what I was told invariably was, well, Tony, we got to have a seat at the table. I was told that way too many times in the past decade. Got to have a seat at the table. What good is a seat at the table? Because the minute October 7th happened, the minute 1,200 Israelis, Jews, and otherwise were murdered or raped or set on fire, all of these people who you claimed to be with, who you claimed were your friends, they were gone. And less than 30 days later, they were explaining how Hamas was noble and Israel was the problem. And that grew and grew and grew and grew to what you see today. Liberal Jews really thought that these people were brethren. Do you know how crazy that is? My brother's in town, the good Dr. Katz. And because tonight is the first night of Passover. He's up for Passover. I currently have 34 pounds of brisket on the smoker. As I do the show, there's 34 pounds of brisket on the smoker. Let me see how it's doing right now. Okay. All right. So I'm monitoring. It's doing fine. Passover is a holiday about escaping bondage, escaping slavery, and coming to freedom, you know, right? The slavery of the Egyptians. But we were talking yesterday, gorgeous day, and talking. How could anybody be this dumb? How could anybody be this much of a fool? How could anybody not think that this was coming? It is the question that you have asked yourself. There is no question as a radio host or as a person that I get more, that I've ever received more question of the same type of question as why are Jews liberals? And the answer to how is it possible that they didn't know is elitism. They actually believed that they were equals as a part of something to go after those people who didn't understand what they did. But as elitism teaches, the circles get smaller. And everybody is on the inside until they have to be on the outside so the other people can keep claiming how they're on the inside. You heard the story of Greg Doyle, a sports columnist at the Indianapolis Star. He was the one when Caitlin Clark, the WNBA first-round pick and the college sensation from the University of Iowa, had the press conference. He was like making the heart symbol with his hands and kind of being all sorts of creepy, as was reported, and then said to the coach he was talking about Caitlin Clark, and he said of Caitlin Clark, "You just got handed the keys to that. What are you going to do with it?" Referring to Caitlin Clark as that and it. And he makes these apologies, but they're not really apologies because, look at me, I'm just a big oaf. Or, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry, Caitlin Clark, I became part of the problem. There were 100 guys in the room asking questions of Caitlin Clark. None of them are a problem. What part of a problem did you think you became? What problem? I don't have a problem. You don't have a problem. He clearly had the problem. It must be weird for Greg Doyle, a man who, from what I am told, doesn't like me at all. But it must be weird for him to find himself out on the outside. And it is clear that if this interaction with Caitlin Clark happened from another reporter, he would have been the first person to be writing about how terrible and how awful, and look how women are treating sports, and this is so terrible, and how he would never do such a thing, and then he would follow it up by saying, harumph, harumph, harumph. These Jewish kids on campus, maybe these Jewish parents, maybe non-Jewish parents, to see themselves on the outside. Because they thought they were on the inside. They thought that they were connected, that this was the movement, and that they were part of something special, that they got it. They had the secret knowledge that David Mamet wrote about in his book, The Secret Knowledge, that Barry Weiss, when she resigned from the New York Times, discussed that somehow these writers think that they know something special and they must spoon feed it to the rest of us. There is no doubt that these students and these parents felt the same way. They were good. They were decent. They were special. And the world needed them. The world needed them to show them the way. And the only place you could learn how to really show them the way is to go to Columbia or Cal Berkeley or Harvard. Or Yale. When it became about Jews, they got kicked to the blanking curb. And they said, what happened? Right? Fred Willard style. What happened? What happened is that you weren't needed anymore. You were on the inside until you were on the outside. And the only group of people who didn't know that that was exactly the thing that was going to happen was them. So this is step one in this larger conversation about what it is that is happening and what it is that is taking place. We're going to get into step two, which is the idea of exactly how crazy has it gotten. And that will get us into a step three, which is about how to respond, which I state to you now, the only way to respond is with force. But what does that mean? It would be irresponsible just to say that and leave it hanging. I will explain it. I'm Tony Katz, and this is Tony Katz Today. So the Dow is up 181. And last week, it was down, down, down every day. So they're hoping for something nice. The NASDAQ is up 91. Tony Katz, Tony Katz Today. Express filed for bankruptcy. I don't think you shopped at Express. Maybe you did. Maybe you did. Maybe your wife did. Maybe a kid did. I don't know. They've been in malls for forever, since I'm a kid. They are shutting down. They filed Chapter 11. I didn't know they owned Bonobos. Oh, that was part of their portfolio. Okay, and up west, they're going to close 95 of their shops. They're closing up all the up west doors. Sales for their closing are expected to begin on Tuesday. And there's a group saying, nah, we're not interested in losing this thing. We're gonna try and acquire the company. I'm curious as to how that business works. If you are in that business, buying the distressed asset and revitalizing, I would love to know how you visualize the dollars. Like, it is fascinating. Well, we could take the brand and we could do this with it, and then we could profit this way, and then we could sell off this. And I want to know how you do the math, right? Would anybody have thought of the brand Express, EXPRESS, being, you know, a brand that's worth value? It's like, do you remember in the malls in like the 80s and 90s, it was Structure? Do you remember the Structure stores, the clothing stores? That's not still around, is it? And if that was going bankrupt, which I think it did, would you have been like, oh, no, I could save that brand? What is the math that gets you there? I'm fascinated by that one. I'm curious about Express. And one of the possible investors is Simon Property Group. Well, that makes sense. They own the malls. This is Tony Katz today.